to the Fantasy Wargaming Podcast. We're your hosts,
Tony
and Paul. And we're joined this evening by two great guys. We got Tanker. Say hello.
Hey, all.
And we got Mr. Red Burdock. How are you keeping, mate? You well?
Yeah, not too bad.
Welcome back, guys. Been ages. So, again, focusing this particular show, this is the third out of the series, we're going to be focusing on the fluff. So, to this point, we thought we'd invite Tanker on. So, Tanker, what do you think about the fluff of the book?
I think it was an interesting choice going around the deadly sins. I think everyone knows them, so it kind of gives you a nice focal point to start with. I think there's some which are a lot more easy to visualise, in my opinion, than others.
It would be interesting to know what the discussion was like when that was put forwards to borrow on the, you know, the seven deadly sins instead of starting from scratch. Is it something that gained momentum? Because I've always found it to be, I like the seven deadly sins, and the way that it's wrapped into the different favours of the dark gods and everything. I think it's quite interesting, but it was a big jump from, you know, the previous edition of the Warriors book to this one, to go from the four to the seven.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly speak to that, given that I was pretty heavily involved in the process. So, we're coming from a different game. We had to make changes, particularly around some of the more unique rule situations in order to make them Ninth Age specific. And this was one of the high, it was the highest priority to get something new in place here. And there were three distinct options. One of them was to keep the number four and try and rejig it in some format that made it distinct. Now that kind of, that discussion focused around, do we just pick and choose a random collection of characteristics and assign them to gods, or do we use a relatable property? And so the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, for example, was suggested as an alternative. And there's some logic to that, obviously. It would have kept the number four, but what it would have done is made, in some ways, some very difficult, probably more difficult, I think, than the sins, types of characteristics that you're trying to embody in the troops. You know, what's the difference between war and famine and death and pestilence? You know, pestilence you can probably do quite easily. Famine, how do you represent that as a miniature? And then death, how is death different to war? And ultimately, the other thing from a writer's point of view, these are all external forces. These are all things that are imposed upon the world. They don't represent agency or choice by the people who are caught up in the story and the people who are being represented in the army. And that's where the discussion evolved towards, what about the seven deadly sins? There's a good basis, there's a grounding there because people are familiar with the concept. Yes, I'm sure lots of people would have rather had the number four and people would have rather had familiar concepts, but at least this wasn't completely alien to them. There are a lot of elements of what came before that translate quite well into the sins. And we could use it as a way to focus on saying people indulging their sins can then help to contribute to the downfall of society. That's a fairly common theme in literature. So you take the well-known theme of the seven sins and you transplant it into a setting where these are individual people giving in to part of their nature, which you can then hopefully represent effectively on the table. And then I guess it's gone out of my head now. That's as far as I got in that thought process.
That's right. So from my side of things, Warriors was one of the first, in fact, it was the first book, wasn't it, that was kind of focused on. I mean, I know Silvan Elves and Undying Dynasties both had like bigger books first, which were like their preludes of how we can do things. But Warriors was really the first proper gold book that came out. Was there a reason behind that, and how the Warriors fit into the Ninth Age fluff?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest reason was because I think, you know, we've expressed it before that for IP reasons, Warriors didn't have, as if you look at most of the armies that exist in Ninth Age, they all have real world analogs to some extent. You know, KOE and Empire obviously are very simple to align with France and England or Holy Roman Empire. And the same goes through lots of different factions, you know, ogres to Mongolia and so on. Warriors is a little bit different. It has elements of barbarian culture, but a lot of the rest of it is quite unique. So what we had to do was find a basis that worked within the Ninth Age setting, that could serve as a sort of foundation for that book. And that's where getting, we had to, I mean, in some ways, the name Warriors of the Dark Gods came before the full entire background. We knew there were Dark Gods, but we didn't know what shape those Dark Gods would take and how they would interact with the world. And so we were looking for something that would then provide an explanation of why is it that people would give over to the Dark Gods? What is it that they would get out of this?
So who is the Allfather, for example? Because from my limited reading of the Ninth Age fluff, there seems to be, like, the linchpin is this Allfather, isn't it? Chaos Father or something?
Yeah, Father Chaos. So this was, I mean, this is a sort of creation myth, essentially, with differing levels of truth behind it, depending on who you're at, who you're talking to. And you know, we looked at there being primordial forces, creation forces. So Gaia being represented as Mother Cosmos, and then the opposing sort of destructive force being Father Chaos. And it had to be something big enough to unite both warriors and demons. So, you know, 1/8 of the world military strength essentially had to be united under this one cause. So that's where we would have this primordial sort of titan-like force of chaos, with his under gods or supporting gods or whatever you call them. So yeah, he provides some element of the direction of the book, but we still wanted the character of a lot of it to come from the seven Dark Gods as opposed to just one chaotic force.
But do all seven of them kind of come together to be Father Chaos, or is Father Chaos like an entity all by itself?
I'm sure speculation would be welcome, and that would be very interesting. But the most common expression is that he is a force in and of himself. But, you know, one of those kind of very unknowable, completely alien to our minds kind of forces.
Okay. I know it's a pretty old hat now, but going to when you first started releasing the Warriors background, one of the biggest jumps, possibly bigger than, you know, the seven, the biggest jump was suddenly it became a society where, you know, people produced food and and traded, rather than, you know, what existed before, which was just warriors running around eating babies and butchering each other. And you think, well, at some point, you know, they're going to need a new pair of shoes and some underpants.
I suppose this is a discussion that has been had many times with regard to Ninth Age writing, and it's also been misquoted many times. You know, there's some
Thank
people
you.
there are some people who will I'm not saying you did, but there are lots of people who will say, we'll try and paraphrase them and say, there's no such thing as evil in Ninth Age, or nobody's bad in Ninth Age. That's not the intention at all. The intention is that everyone has reasons for what they do. So if you look at Tolkien or any of the big fantasy writers, they created epic evil in Sauron and Morgoth and other characters, but they always had rationales. They might be insane rationales. They might be rationales that make no sense to any normal person. And with warriors, I think you have a lot of that. You have essentially anyone who was to look at what Warriors decide to do with their lives and the decisions that they make would say these people are insane. They're completely evil. But from the Warriors' point of view, they have to have a reason for why they're doing it. And so the reason became, let's have some sort of a path of ascension, some route that they're following to a goal. And so attracting the attention and the favor of their god was the primary thing. But that can't mean you just, you could, you know, we didn't want it to be the pantomime evil. We didn't want it to be, they were essentially, why haven't they starved to death? Why haven't they, you know, all gone extinct? Why haven't they been hunted to extinction, etc.? So we, in some ways, they still do that. We still have them raiding for supplies. We still have them being forces that are very difficult to counter. But we also provided that barbarians would serve as sort of interface between them and other cultures in a way that they could trade with barbarians, barbaric cultures. They could obtain some of the supplies that they would need without, hopefully without sort of ruining the mystique. They don't have to have, you don't have to have a warrior farmer, for example, you know.
That makes sense. So changing a little bit, Tanker, you've played Warriors for quite a while. What drew you to Warriors? Was it their background or was it just simply their play style?
That's a good one. So it was originally the fact you could spam stuff.
okay, I'm asking the wrong person.
I'd had Warriors previously in previous editions and always liked how they played. So it was always the play style. So for me, I've got to admit, I do like a lot of the new fluff. I think some of the sins are a lot easier to visualize how they would play, how they would be on a battlefield than others, in my opinion.
And have you got any particular favorite parts of the book where you particularly like the fluff that appeals to you?
I really like the Chosen Knight fluff. And as we talked earlier, it just upsets me how bad Karkadans are in relation to how good the story is for it. They're meant to be like the scariest mount out of everything if you read it, and then Tuskers are there. So
yeah, that's what I found. It's like, but these amazing models, they've got fantastic background. Rolls are crap. Guys on back are pretty decent though.
So how good would Chosen Knights be if the mounts were good though?
Yeah, I mean, no, just
how would you balance that out? Would we
make them a bit more expensive?
Karkadan's better, but
it would be so expensive.
Suddenly in the fluff, you know, all Chosen Knights have to go into battle with their left hand tied behind them for balance purposes.
You run them in units. You run them in units of 1.5.
This is it. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, like you say, I mean, Ninth Age is about balance, and I understand that. But like you say, the fluff behind the whole Karkadan situation, I think is pretty good. It's just actually one of the things I really like about the fluff is the way that you've got like the three distinct routes. You've got, obviously you've got the barbarians side of things, which is fair enough, and they don't really make the book. And then you've got the way of the warrior, and then the way of the fallen. You've got the two distinct routes. Which, do you want to elaborate on that a little bit, Boyd? Because I'm a little bit hazy. I know what it is, but I don't.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, we spent a lot of time discussing this, and the idea was that in having there's an obvious progression, which is a warrior progressing to a chosen, progressing to a chosen lord, and then the idea being that they could ascend to become a herald, so that a herald was like the end goal.
There's a great picture of this, isn't there, in the...
Yeah, there's a really cool artwork that was done by one of our artists where he kind of created this old school looking diagram which kind of sets this out. And then you have the mirror of that, which is you have Fallen, and then you have Forsworn, then you have Doomlords. And so there's a progression there that makes sense as a kind of alternate way of advancing. So we tied that together by saying, you know, those who fail as warriors like Warriors is not a, it's not a forgiving culture. You know, your god isn't going to give you lots of second chances and lots of encouragement. If you fuck up, then you're out on your arse, basically. So then the next step was, then what happens if you fail? Could you have this sort of secondary path that you could take? And then we use that to tie back into Wretched Ones and Forsaken Ones, where if you sort of fall off the bottom, if you have become completely irredeemable, then all that power that's been invested into you, that's turned you into this killing machine, doesn't go to waste, but it sort of erupts out of you and leaves you as a sort of wretched shell of what you were.
Well, I do recommend you look at the art, the pretty picture to illustrate. And I suppose where you were saying about that energy not going to waste, that kind of investment of the Dark Gods, is that, you know, the Forsworn upgrade for Damnation as a direct representation? I'd never considered it before. It's like the final kick for failing.
Absolutely. This was, I mean, it's something that could have been represented by other units. You know, you could have, in theory, you could have had Chosen turning into Wretched Ones, but obviously that's a lot more complicated to do. The Forsworn were already on a 40 mil base, so having that as an optional upgrade basically allowed us to represent a certain part of the background by saying this unit has failed, has run from combat, and instead, on the spot, they become transformed into Wretched Ones. So it didn't have to be in there, but it's just a nice way of representing a background element into the rules of the game.
Yeah, I think personally, again, it's another thing Ninth Age does very well is kind of cross the fluff over into the rules of the game. I think it's very thematic, isn't it, where these guys break from combat and then suddenly you've just got a unit of Wretched Ones there instead. It's a... I think the way the Ninth Theme have done this particular book is just the whole background behind it. When I had my army on the table, you could just see it all working, why everybody was the way they were, unit types, why they, do you know what I mean? You've not just made models and then written rules for them. You've got a whole background about why that particular unit type exists within that book. I know we hit on it earlier as well about the Feldrax. I know you were mentioning earlier about the Feldrax ancestor and the whole dragon slash doesn't fly anymore slash hates things that fly. I really like that part of the book as well. I just think it's been really well thought out. Why'd you get rid of my trolls?
I won't claim any responsibility for that. But there was a process of rationalizing the book to some extent, and some elements, some units were, and this was very early on, you know, this was, I think that, you know, this was a decision that was made. Were they still in there up until the new version was launched? I can't quite remember.
I think so. But Chaos Ogres as well, wasn't it? I think that was in the Ogre book.
Yeah, that was the upgrade that you could take into some of the early cult leader stuff as well, where you kind of had chaos links in ogres, but I think it was really just a part of rationalizing the book and saying there are too many entries, too many overlapping entries. Would the trolls do something that Forsworn and or Wretched Ones are not representing? Maybe they would, I don't know. As I say, I don't claim to be a game designer, and I avoid anything that looks like game design too much.
You have got a lot of units in there already, is the only thing. You've already got a lot of options, so
you can't... A lot of things that did the same thing. But where's my Throg gone?
I mean, surely that's a great model for a Doom Lord, no?
It is indeed, yeah. You can't complain. There's plenty of variety in the Warriors book. Lots to use. I'm just playing devil's advocate, sir. Devil's advocate.
It's not an unreasonable question. And we did actually put trolls into the Ascalon book specifically for...
You should have Asklanders, Paul.
I think that's right, isn't it? Trolls are in the Askland book.
Yeah. Oh, yes, ice they trolls. Are. Those ice trolls ice are trolls. Brilliant.
Yeah.
they are amazing.
Yeah, I think ultimately supplements do offer... It's not, you know, it's not always the best answer to anyone who says, my beloved unit has gone. but it does give us a way to say we need a tighter army book, we need a tighter core book, but we can give some elements a focus in other ways. So, you know, I hope people will still find things like that as ways to enjoy things that they might not be able to find in the core book.
Excellent. Okay. So, it was a very light touch, I think, this episode. We've just kind of touched on a couple of elements of the background rather than go into it in depth. But I think maybe we'll probably come back to it at a later date when we look at demons as well. I know we did a long, long episode on the demon background. But no, I'd just like to say thanks to you guys for coming along, Tanker and Ed, for all three of our little episodes about Warriors.
No worries. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks very much. And if I can plug the Warriors book to anyone who wants to read a story, I'd spent quite a lot of time writing quite large parts of that. So I will always plug that to some extent.
I'm trying to remember the name of it now as well. I did read it when it came out. Is it Into the...
Circling the Abyss. That was actually
Circling
for
the Abyss.
That was,
oh,
actually
that was
for
Demon.
That was for the Demon book. That was an extra text for the Demon's release. Which I did write that one, but no, the Warriors full book. Although the rules parts are out of date now, but the original story texts were a lot of fun to write. So,
yeah, I definitely second that. I think one of the things that these ninth books have done so well, obviously, it keeps balancing. So, like you say, the old books is no longer relevant with the rules within it, but I think that the fluff is still well worth a read. It's very inspiring. I really like the way that it crosses over with the demon fluff, and you guys have thought really hard about how it entwines within the ninth world. Of all the books, that's the one kind of part of the fluff that I actually know the most about. I'm still not quite sure on the other bits yet. I haven't read the other, just haven't had the chance. But like you say, the pictures, the way the book worked, yeah, I was drawn in. I thought it was fantastic. Like you say, I'll just echo Tony. Thanks, guys, for coming on. It's been a really good to get extra insight into an interesting book, in my opinion.
Excellent. It's goodbye from him.
And it's goodbye from me.
Cheers, guys. Speak to you soon.